He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
The other lineup-related, rotation-related thing that I have been mulling over is the idea of LeBron defensively playing a three, and not just that on its own, but pairing that with adding more size to the lineups. And internally, the only option for that is Christian Wood, but it would allow you, the Bron-Wood-AD front court would give you a lot of collective size. It would give you good rim protection. You would be enabled to like hedge if you wanted to. You could stick Wood at the five, have him be the guy hedging, AD on the weak side, especially McMillan loves to hedge. So I expect they're going to do this a bit. And if they're tiny and you don't have a good size out there, you're going to get lit up. So having AD on the back line, being able to erase 4v3s or a 2v1 skip pass, like that should fare well for the team. He actually had that helper role from a defensive role standpoint the title year, and then also the year after the title, which I think honestly, like if he didn't get injured, they were a title caliber team or a finals caliber team. He has not had that role since. And I think we've seen, you know, struggles partially because of that. This would be a way to get LeBron into a better role for him in a number of different ways. And, you know, there are certain weaknesses of that approach, but I think just having more rim protection so that even if LeBron does get beat on ball, there's good rim protection behind him, no matter where AD is. Even if Austin or D'Lo, if you do want to keep starting those two, do get beat on the perimeter, like you've got really strong rim protection. And I think that more, you know, that size approach while still maintaining spacing is really important. And it's something that LeBron at the three with Rui or Vando at the four, who are not good rim protectors for fours, does not really do for you. So at a team level, I like that. And then for LeBron specifically, I mean, I can get into it in a minute, but there are a whole lot of reasons why it didn't work well for him, or it's trending towards not working well for him. And as he ages, this is one key area that I see is dropping off for him. And we've seen some of it already. It's just like off-ball defense is not something people tend to notice as much as on-ball defense. So it went a little bit under the radar, but his impact dropped off last year and it dropped off the year before. And a big piece of that was this off-ball defense. And I think if you're the team, you can't operate like fans. You have to get out in front of it. You got to do the best thing for you in 2024, 2025. And you can't play him like he's, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years younger than he is right now.
That's a great job by you to make this segue as smooth as this is, because this is actually the reason I reached out to you in the first place was consensus to this point on LeBron is that he has to play power forward because he doesn't have the foot speed to keep up with small forwards. You actually outlined, I thought, in great detail why, while some of that might be true, he's actually hurting you in these other ways in particular. Do you want to highlight what those ways are that LeBron is hurting you defensively at power forward, maybe more than he would at small forward?
Sure. Yeah, I think if we just look at like the jobs for a four defensively compared to a three, what we tend to see is fours are asked to box out a whole lot more. They are asked to do a lot more damage on the boards from a rim protection standpoint. They're averaging 8.2 contests at the rim per game or per 75 possessions compared to 5.3. So, you know, a good bit more. They're defending an ISO about as frequently as threes. So there isn't actually all that much of a difference from an ISO standpoint. And in terms of the percentage of the time you're on court and needing to defend an ISO for either of those roles, it's about 3% of the time. So it's not all that often, but just the general rotations, tagging roll men, you know, trapping the box when you rotate over to stop a drive, those are pretty long rotations. You're going to have to run. You got to get over there. And it's important to have someone who is very active and mobile and willing to do that. And LeBron wasn't. LeBron has not been. And he is like the least active helper that's in a helper role, basically. We have a defensive involvement rate stat at B-Ball Index. And last season, LeBron would rank third lowest among the 4,653 players over the past 11 seasons that have played 200 minutes or more. Like, really bad. In the year prior, he wasn't too far behind. So, like, the job requires you to do these things to succeed, and he already isn't. So this isn't me like saying, hey, I think old man LeBron will suddenly be bad at this. He's already bad at it. And that off-ball defense hurts things. So when someone does get beat on the perimeter and the other team gets a dunk, usually, you know, where do your eyes go to? It's like, come on, D'Lo. Come on, Austin. What are you doing? It's not that way when AD standing there, forces the kick out, and then the team's able to recover. You're not as worried about those little breakdowns. But when your backline defense isn't defending, every breakdown is resulting in better shots. And that becomes a problem. But the fingers get pointed at LeBron's teammates, not him. And so to me, that's super important. And then like post defense and boxing out, like when I played, I was a big man. Those are the things that I would say are the most exhausting things to do if you're going to do them well. Yeah. And compare that to threes, you don't have to do post defense all that much. And the reason like JJ keeps talking about how the Lakers need to be crashing from the corners with their wings is because generally like the norm in the NBA right now is when a shot goes up, wings stand still and their defenders can chill. They're not needing to box out. And so there's a big difference between what that norm is right now for threes compared to fours and fives, where you're needing to box out like every play. So the load on LeBron in terms of like, if he does the job well, it's going to be strenuous. And I think that takes away from his offense. And even as is, he hasn't been doing the job well, and that hurts the team. So I think just getting him into a role where, yeah, he's going to get burnt a little bit more often on the perimeter. But even when he does, as long as that guy that you're putting into the rotation as the four, as like Christian yeah. Wood, he's a good rim protector. He's an excellent rim protector as a four. AD's an excellent rim protector as a five. And LeBron's an excellent rim protector as a three. LeBron as a four is a rim protector, not all that great. And Wood as a five is fine. But if you can slot them correctly, even when you do have those breakdowns, which is, I think, what people are most scared about, because most of the focus defensively is for one-on-one defense, you're set up to be better off, whether it's LeBron or AD or Wood or D'Lo or Reeves or whoever getting beat on the perimeter, because you are so much more likely to have a rim protector there to erase things and give you a chance to recover.
Yeah, it's like, in essence, then it sounds like, you know, LeBron at the three has fewer ways to hurt you than he would at the four defensively, right?
Right.
And also importantly, LeBron at the three opens up some personnel options, whether it be for this roster as it's currently built, but then also like in trades and stuff, because, you know, the types of players that the Lakers have been looking for, like they've been kind of focused on these athletic threes. But like if you're able to bring in kind of a bigger, more physical four or a five that you're able to play next to AD, then that really opens up your options. And, you know, we'll always, I think, have the what if of gosh darn it, the
Miles Turner
in it. What's that?
Miles Turner.
Thank you. Yeah. And how different, you know, talk about a sliding door opportunity there, a sliding door moment there, where if they just bring him in and then you basically keep AD at the four and you, you know, keep LeBron at the three, and then you have this perfect, you know, kind of like the perfect, like if you were to design him in a lab, absolutely perfect player for those two front court guys. I guess that'll, you know, we'll never get to see it unless we're playing 2K. Mm-hmm. But what do you think though? Like there's a theory out there that AD at the five has actually been the reason or one of the big reasons why his shot has fallen off of a cliff. Do you buy into that at all?
I looked at that and took a look at like result based like shooting percentage data. I took a look at shot making data that adjusts for shot quality. There has been no correlation. There has been no like when he plays bigger, he's going to shoot worse or better. So I do not see that as the problem or an answer for the Lakers. I just think AD is not a very good jump shooter. And most seasons of his career, he has not been a very good jump shooter. And even not very good jump shooters will have stretches of time where they shoot good or shoot well. We saw with like Cam Reddish. Cam Reddish had stretches where he was a good three-point shooter. But yep. As long as you know, keep that sample size large, it's going to get back to the truth. And the truth is he's not very good and AD has not been very good. So unless they change something with his form itself, and I'm not a shot form doctor to have a good perspective there, like I do not expect that to suddenly alter things. So no, the data doesn't say so. And I would agree with the data.
Yeah, I think I mostly agree with you there. I think it's an oversimplification of the various factors that go into shooting. I think that, you know, a lot of people, like, this kind of goes back to what we talked about with JJ Redick, right? Where people who would want to have AD at the four are going to feel a certain way about his shooting ability at the four versus his shooting ability at the five. And how, you know, so, you know, we talked about that previously, but the one place where I do think that there's a potential for some credence is that, like, AD, you know, at the five, you know, involves a lot more of the boxing out that you talked about, the post defense that you talked about. And that could potentially, and, you know, JJ Redick said he had a theory. He didn't give it away, but he had a theory on why AD's shot fell off of a cliff. It might be your theory, right? It might just be that AD shot out of his mind for a little bit and then came back to earth since. But, you know, I do think there might be. And then also, like, when it comes to bulking up to play the position, we've seen in the past guys bulk up and have it affect their shot. Now, we've seen guys bulk up and have it not affect their shot, right? Most notably Steph. If you look at him now versus when he was in the league, he's like a completely different human being. And obviously it didn't have an impact on him there. I just think there's more margin for error for a shooter of Steph's ilk compared to AD. So there are some potential theories out there. The reason I bring this up is that, you know, for that concern that, well, what happens if you take away AD's at least theoretical floor spacing at the five? What does that do? When in reality, it's just that. It's just theoretical. He doesn't really space the floor at the five. So it, like, I'm actually more open to playing even a non-floor spacing five next to AD, because you at least get the defensive upgrade, even if it might hurt you a little bit offensively. What do you think about that idea there?
Say that last part again. What?
So, like, I'm open to a, you know, playing a more traditional center next to AD, even if that center doesn't necessarily space the floor. And I have no concern whatsoever over losing AD's quote unquote floor spacing at the five, because it's basically non-existent. And I would rather get the kind of defensive and physicality advantages of having, you know, that super bulked up front court. Whereas what the Lakers have basically been doing lately, they bring in these theoretical floor spacers at the five who don't actually space the floor all that much, or they have AD more at the five and play these really, really small lineups that also don't stretch out defenses. I would rather just go back to the strengths that we know that AD and LeBron provide, which is that bigger, stronger, faster kind of approach to the sport.
I think it would hurt offensively. Defensively, I think, is the value. Like, and this has been a debate with AD forever, is if he's a four, great, we're going to be better defensively because you've got an extra big body out there. If he's your five, you should be better offensively because there should be more of a spaced floor. We have seen throughout his entire career, when he is playing next to another non-shooter, whether it be like a bruising big or it's a Jared Vanderbilt, like when he's out there with one of those guys, he becomes much more of a jump shooter and he gets to the rim a lot less. And I think it is really important to keep the rim a priority and keep that open. And so offensively, that gives me some heartburn. If that big guy is a good lob threat and you can get some of that like vertical spacing sort of gravity, where like you can't leave them or we're just going to throw the lob up and they're going to finish it over you, that helps alleviate some of it. If you're going to be super heavy into off-ball screening, like there are ways to work around this a bit. But that would be the concern. I do think, like, if they traded for, like, a Walker Kessler, like, he and AD defensively would be so phenomenal that, like, it would be worth it offensively. Yeah. And Kessler's a good enough, like, lob threat that, like, I'm not concerned about there being some overlap there. I don't know if it's what you want to go with as your base look, but I'm okay with, like, saying we're going to win a rock fight because we have two elite defensive bigs.
That's basically where I was going.
We don't have that. We don't have that guy.
Yeah. Well, because like essentially what I'm saying is that the, like in trying to kind of straddle that fence, it's you know, you can actually zoom out and apply this to the organization as a whole, in that like by trying to straddle the fence and be competitive now while also remaining flexible in the future, they've managed to do neither particularly well. And I think with what the Lakers have basically done with Anthony Davis, and I think this has a lot to do with some of his like rating, you know, impact rating type numbers, is that like they've managed to not necessarily generate the kind of spacing that you would like to have with AD playing the five while also being so small, so that you don't really get the benefit of AD, the, you know, destroyer of worlds on the weak side. And if the Lakers were to bring in a better, and, you know, like that's what I it's something that I've written about and spoken about on the show before, is I thought it was really funny how the guys that LeBron would take a pay cut for were Klay Thompson, future Hall of Famer, James Harden, future Hall of Famer, and Jonas Valanciunas. And that like really spoke to me, that like he and AD have kind of put their heads together and said like, no, we want to get back to being bigger. And Jonas was the free agent du jour. And that's where they arrived at. And I think that's something that in terms of personnel or approach to the sport, I don't know how well that may jive with JJ Redick's approach to the sport, or his kind of, you know, how he kind of sees how things should kind of play out. But that's something that like I would like to see the Lakers get back to. The, you know, the spacing wasn't great with Dwight. The spacing wasn't great with JaVale, but it was like they were so great defensively that you could kind of get away with some of the offensive limitations. And I think that's something that I would like to see the Lakers kind of pursue a little bit more.
Well, I mean, the Lakers were better that title year when AD was playing the five.
Yeah, like, true. Also true.
They were more successful. It was they were good enough when those guys were out there, but I mean, they both had poor offensive impact and for a reason. And that reason was when they were out there, things really got mucked up. And when AD was the five those seasons, they had elite perimeter defense with Caruso and KCP and Avery Bradley and like younger LeBron. I see younger LeBron, but relatively younger LeBron than where he is today. Like they, Kuzma, like they were able to do things then that when AD is out there in a small lineup these days with this group, you can't do. Like you can't have AD as the five and then, you know, not have rim protection and size with your threes and fours, and then have like a D'Lo Reeves backcourt and expect to be strong defensively. And so I'm with you in terms of, I'd love to add that size. To me, like Christian Wood is the only internal option, and he's coming off of his only, and by only, I mean like his only bad 3-point shot making season of his career. Every other season of his career, he's been like a really strong return on his shot quality sort of guy. And we got to see him at his worst. I think we will see a bounce back. Like, we have to see a bounce back there. And that fit should work really well. And if you're going to like pursue that kind of player, like Wendell Carter Jr. is the kind of guy I'd be looking to trade for. Or like even so if you try
Lakers,
to go to-
they called Orlando for him. They had, you know, lengthy conversations with Orlando for him.
Yeah. And like, that's the kind of guy I think you need to go for. And we've seen the front office try to do that. Like they tried Gasol, and honestly, like the Gasol thing worked for the most part. He's not someone you want to be able to like switch on to campaign. And we saw that in the playoffs, but like it doing what he's good at, it kind of worked, and they didn't use him enough as a pick and pop option. He was picking and rolling way too much. Like, I don't think they used him well offensively, and that limited his impact a little bit, but that, They tried Mo Bamba, and I don't think he ever really got a real shot. I don't know what it looked like behind the scenes, but he wasn't someone that we saw much of a sample size of in actual basketball with the Lakers. But he has been another one of those guys that profiles as big rim protector that can space the floor. Miles Turner was the guy they were interested in, and he checks these boxes. We didn't see them pull the trigger there. So like they've tried to go for this kind of guy. And I see that as being like a way to, if they would have gotten Turner, like Turner AD is a backcourt or a front court that sets you up for the future. And defensively, you're going to be really good every year. And like a year from now, when LeBron probably retired and not on this team, like you're set up well defensively, and you've got, you know, you can still run things around AD offensively with great spacing with that kind of duo. I don't think Christian Wood is that caliber of guy. And so I'm in this uncomfortable position where like, I'd love to run that. I want to see it. I think it'll work. But at the same time, I don't trust that he's going to get 30 minutes a game and perform well and be a reliable option. So yeah. Outside of them trading for that skill set, I don't see this as being like a core piece of what they'll be able to do this year. And so we might have to wait another year before we see this potential turn into reality.
Yeah, the good news is, you know, none of this core is very old, and we have plenty of time to wait. You know, there's no downside there.
Isn't it crazy, Anthony? Like, they bring in this coaching staff, and everything I'm hearing from, like, owner, GM, coach, players is, like, player development, and, like, we're going to develop these young players. You don't have a young team. Like, yeah. this is a middle-aged team from a basketball, like, NBA standpoint. I don't know what we're talking about here. Yeah, you do have some young guys, but they're not ones that, like, I don't know. This isn't like OKC a couple of years ago. You grabbed a coach that fits like a rebuild, and you're not there yet. You need to like wait a year. And so I think they're going to be in this in-between phase where unless they really get surprised and JJ is vastly exceeding expectations and this team's doing really well and they truly think it's worth investing in, I think they're going to hang on to those picks, let this ride out, sell some tickets. It'll be like a farewell tour. We're going to get to see Bronny with Bron, and then, you know, then try to rebuild and try to play for the future rather than wasting picks now if they don't believe in what this looks like.
I think it's an incredibly spoiled stance for them to take. You know, the notion that like, oh yeah, we'll just wait for the next LeBron. We'll just wait for the next time we have Anthony Davis in his prime. We'll just wait for the next time that we have both of those guys somehow at the same time.
How many years in a row trying to pair someone up with Kobe? Like,
yeah,
you're not, just because you have cap space or just because you're the Lakers doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be able to just grab whoever you want in free agency or trades. And I think, you know, with these CBA restrictions, it makes some of this stuff harder. So I think if they don't develop internally, draft well, get lucky and find that superstar, it's not something we're going to be able to just quickly expedite.
Yeah, I agree. All right, before we get you out of here, I want to get out of the way and let you plug all of the great work that you're doing, whether it's with Lakers Exceptionalism, Basketball Index, all of that good stuff. Tell everybody where to find your work.
Sure. So you can, my handle's on the screen. You can find me at Tim_NBA on Twitter. I'll be tweeting about the Lakers. I'll be tweeting from an X's and O's and data perspective. I am someone who my background is in coaching. It's in data. I'm in kind of like a weird in-between space where I try to mesh those worlds together. And, you know, I'm a Lakers fan. I've been following the team for a while here and want the team to do well. But at the same time, I'm going to try to be honest with you. And honest doesn't mean all positive. Honest doesn't mean all negative. Honest is like, hey, I'm tracking every play. Here's how I'm grading these things. Here's what the facts say. And we're going to follow the facts. And so if that's something you're interested in, you can find my work there for free on Twitter, of course. In addition to that, I have my own podcast with Tom Zayas, and we cover the Lakers specifically through those lenses. And we'll do a lot on playback with game streams where we'll be, you know, we watch a play, you know, we're going through watching the game and then it's in a TV timeout. Let's draw up a play on the digital whiteboard and show you what they ran and why it worked. And, you know, by the way, here are three clips that I was able to pull where they ran it earlier this year, because I have all of that logged already. So that kind of content, if you want to learn more about the game, I think that's what our niche is trying to fill. If you're interested more in the data side, you can check out my website, Basketball Index. We've been growing and growing, and this past year has been us kind of working on ourselves, working on a lot behind the scenes. We have some really, really good data. We're at a point where our data pipeline is, you know, it's not Tim with a bunch of spreadsheets doing things. It's a bunch of code with automation and everything it should be. We have some really, I'd say, impressive facelifts and new reveals coming up in the next month that you'll want to keep an eye out for, that I think make for a really good enhancement to the user experience from a platform standpoint. So keep an eye out for that. It's the same sort of data that, like, we have front offices, we have agents, we have players, we have coaching staff members, we have people that you'll be very familiar with that are purchasing this stuff and using it for themselves. It's that caliber of stuff. And if you want to be able to get a good feel for how 29 other teams are playing, check it out. Because I know I am not going to ever watch a representative sample of other teams to be able to say with confidence, this guy's good at this, that guy's bad at that, and here's exactly how they fit in. So the data is really helpful. We use percentiles, we use letter grades, color coding, all that good stuff. And, you know, if you don't want to pay for that, that's your problem. You can take that up with God. But if you're interested in that sort of stuff, check it out. And if you want to dig deeper into the Lakers exceptionalism hole, we also have a Discord where we got a bunch of sickos just talking about hoops 24/7 and digging into scheme and conspiracy theories with the Lakers and all sorts of different things. So that's what we got going on.
Like I said earlier at the top of the show, it's a really cool community. And succeeding with analytics forward stuff is very, very difficult to do. All the kudos in the world to you guys for doing it. Tim, this has been an absolute blast, as it always is. And I look forward to hopefully talking to you either before the season kicks off or shortly thereafter to be able to talk about what we're actually seeing from JJ Redick once we finally see it in practice.
Anytime, man. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
All right, everybody, that is going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lounge. Please hit that subscribe button. Please hit that like button. Please review all of that good stuff. Tell your friend that you love the show. Tell your enemies that you hate it. And until the next time you guys hear from me, I'm Anthony Irwin. That was Tim of Lakers Exceptionalism. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. And I will talk to you tomorrow.